everybody, and welcome to season two of True Stories of Tinseltown. Yay, yay, yay. I got to season two. Hooray. And you know who I have as a guest? I have the wonderful John O'Dowd, who became my dear friend, and I'm so grateful for that, who was like my first guest last year. What the heck are these people doing? You were.
That's not me.
Do you hear this over here? What is going on?
I do.
Stop it, people. This is an apartment.
No, it's Barbara. Grace, it's Barbara.
Is it? She's saying hi. Hello, Barbara.
She wanted to let us know she's here, too.
Yes, and she loves you. And so I'm having John on, and the book he wrote, the first book he wrote was Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, which was a movie she did with James Cagney, right? That was her most popular flick.
That's right, Grace. Yep.
And, you know, that was something that she really got noticed for. And John wrote an amazing book. I did not know who Barbara was, but I am this kind of person who loved classic Hollywood, and I just devoured autobiographies and biographies. And when I read John's, I just, you know, I was so, you know, compelled to keep reading about Barbara and everything else. It was amazing.
Thank you.
Such a great book. And now, is that you or at my house?
It's at your house. I'm telling you, it's Barbara.
All right, Barbara. Welcome.
She's here too. That's wild.
It is. Hello,
no, my
dear.
I've got the door closed and I'm all by myself. Me and you.
I'm all by myself, but of course I live in an apartment building and these maniacs clonk, clonk, clonk all the time. Yeah,
that's what it is.
No, me either. It's just kind of funny. And then now John has done a wonderful book, and it's called Barbara Payton, A Life in Pictures. And I know you worked your butt off for it because you're a perfectionist. You want to get the best stuff out. You are honest about Barbara. You don't like paint it, you know, like it's all sunshine day. And no, because unfortunately her life was pretty horrible in so many respects.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
So in John's book, which I highly recommend, that's sitting on my lap and probably weighs 30 pounds. Like I said, I pump iron with this book. I am going to be like, you know, Mrs. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
it's a deadly weapon.
It is. That's exactly it. If somebody bothers me, it's going to be like, okay, John and Barbara, take him for me.
Like I told you before, if people get the book and don't like it, it makes a really good doorstop.
I don't know how they couldn't like it, because you collected such wonderful photos. You have photos from when she was a child onto the end of her life, which was just so horrifying. But you have all of her movies in order and her relationships. And it's not only photos, but you also talk about all that stuff as well.
Yeah, how about the headlines, too? All those headlines.
Oh, my God. She got them, didn't she?
Yeah, and they raked her over the coals pretty good, too.
They really did. You know, and of course, in those days, I think mental illness was certainly not on anyone's big time.
It
just wasn't thought of. And they pretty much thought of Barbara as a wild cannon and didn't see the fact that there had to be something deeply wrong with her to live the life that she had led.
That's right. Yes, I agree with you. Absolutely.
And you talk about it. You have her son's living, correct?
Yes, he is 71, mm-hmm. and he lives in Texas. I haven't spoken to him in quite a while, but I am going to send him a copy of the book.
Oh, he'll love it. And he wrote the foreword in John's book of the Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye, and he gave John a lot of info
Yes.
Along with Barbara's sister-in-law, who was like Barbara's best friend, right?
That's right. Yes. Lifelong best friend.
Yeah. And she was, you know, she told it like it was, but she also told it like it was where Barbara was also kind and, you know, not some kind
Very
of...
generous.
Right.
Very and, generous.
Yeah. Yep. So you dedicated the book kind of to her as well, right? Because she died recently.
Yes, she passed away recently at the age of, I think she was 85 or 86.
Wow.
She was a wonderful lady, very warm, and she trusted me. And, you know, she didn't know me from Adam when right. I first showed up to work on the first book. And but there we hit it off right away. And she just gave me so much information about Barbara, good and bad.
And she also photos, too, right? You got a lot of photos from her.
That's right. A lot of family photos that were never published before.
Yeah.
So I've used them in both books.
And they're amazing. You guys will love this. I mean, this is just good because it's not just, like I said, photos. You go... you know, through step by step through things that happened to her life, to what happened in her life. And yeah. She was an absolutely gorgeous woman. And
she really was. Yep. She really was a gorgeous woman. And she had a great start in films, and she had a lot of potential and promise, and the industry was behind her. They believed in her potential, and it was over in what, a few years.
How sad, because she became more of a party girl rather than she liked to drink. She liked to hang out at bars. Her parents were alcoholics, as well as her brother. And so, you know, that genetic thing is there. I don't care what anyone says. You know, that's there. And Barbara liked to party.
Oh, yeah, she, you know, and she had like a rip-roaring laugh. That's what a lot of people told me. She just loved to party and have a good time, and she loved to go wild. She was just
She was like a wild little
stallion.
She was, and I was thinking, I've never heard her speak. I wonder if there's something on YouTube where I can actually hear her talk.
Yes.
Because
there are several videos on YouTube, and in fact, there's a radio interview on YouTube that she did in I think it was Georgia or one of those states in the South. Mm-hmm. She did a radio interview when she was doing a publicity tour for her film Drums in the Deep South. That's a film she did with Guy Madison, and a woman radio host interviewed Barbara. It was only a brief interview, maybe 10 minutes, but you can hear Barbara on that interview. She's very lighthearted, and you could tell she had a good sense of humor, very polite, very intelligent, and well-spoken. I think if people were to hear that, a lot of people might be shocked by that she was so well-spoken and intelligent, because you know, if you don't know a lot about her, you wouldn't think that about her.
No, because of everything you read. So
exactly.
If you could send that to me, I will post that when I post the podcast.
Sure.
So people can hear her voice and I can hear her voice, because I don't know what she sounds like.
And you've never seen the Cagney film, Grace?
Never. I've never seen any of her films.
If you could see the one film of hers, I would suggest that you see Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye. The film she made in 1950 with James Cagney. She was his leading lady in that film.
Mm-hmm.
She did a wonderful job, an excellent job. She had only been acting for 2 years, and she'd only been in Hollywood for 2 years, and she was his leading lady in that film. I mean, when you think about how long it took people like Marilyn Monroe to move up the ranks, it's almost amazing that Barbara was able to get in there so quickly. And but that's the film I would advise you to see if you wanted to see
I definitely do. So she pretty much had affairs with Guy Madison. She did have an affair with him. She did a movie with Gregory Peck, and she said she had an affair with him and sold the story to Confidential magazine with that one.
Yes. Yeah. She was hurting financially.
Yes.
And she sold that story to them. And she was pretty much broke by then.
Yes.
It wasn't an admirable thing for her to do. That's,
no.
That's for sure.
I think it got her a lot of negative press and negative feelings from the people in Hollywood when she did that. And she also
did the same thing with Bob Hope.
Yeah, but he's such a scum. Who cares? He was so horrible. He'd throw his wife Dolores out there, 99 years old, that they were together forever, but he cheated on her left, right, east, west,
yeah,
north, south. No, I'm not either. Well, that's what I've heard about Bob Hope. Yeah. I've never heard anything good about him. And, Barbara did tell and sold the story to Confidential that he put her up in an apartment, right?
Yes, he did, in Hollywood. And, because she had become his groupie. She was signed to Universal Studios at that time as a contract player. But she would leave Hollywood to follow him around. It's kind of strange when you think about it that there were groupies back then, but she was one. And she followed him around, and then when they got back to Hollywood, he put her up in a hotel. No, not in a hotel, in an apartment. And that's where they would carry on their affair.
How long did that last?
Just a few months. And it supposedly ended when he was acting in a film with Lucille Ball at the time, and he was hurt on set, and he had to go to the hospital. And from what I was told, Barbara prepared a delicious meal for him. She was a gourmet cook, and she brought it to the hospital. And instead of eating the meal, he ordered takeout from Romanoff's. And so she got very angry with him. Huh. And they had words, and he basically dumped her. So, but she was getting money from him left and right. He was giving her money, and he was paying all her bills. So when he dumped her, she was very angry. And so she waited a few years, and I guess she got some sweet revenge by selling the story of their affair to Confidential magazine.
Yeah.
And he was irate. He was said to be irate when that story came out.
I can believe that. And I can see where anyone would, if you sell a story to Confidential, you just don't think someone's going to do that but she needed the money, like you said. And she said
her acting career was over.
She did. Was that when she came back and said, I'm having a comeback? Was that a couple years later?
Yeah, that was a couple of years later. She had been living in Mexico with her fourth husband, Tony.
Yeah.
And they were carrying on down there and drinking a lot and fighting and who knows what, because, they were in Mexico. So then she came back to Hollywood to announce that she was planning to divorce him. And along with that, she was planning to make a comeback in films. And she was friends with Raymond Burr because they had done a film together in 1951 called Bride of the Gorilla.
I love that movie.
it's great. It's over the top and outrageous. Yeah. And it's a B film, but it's entertaining.
And she did a good job. She didn't do it as a B film. She did it as something that she really liked.
That's right. So she was kind of hoping that he would be able to get her a part in Perry Mason because, in 1958, he was riding high with the Perry Mason TV show. But unfortunately, the producers of the show and CBS, the network that carried the show, wouldn't hire her. I guess she was deemed uninsurable by then.
Yeah, and that she was bad news.
Trouble.
Yeah.
She was unable to make her comeback. And I'm sure her drinking intensified out of frustration, after that happened.
And she also did drugs, right, John?
She did. Yeah. She dabbled with heroin. I don't know if
Yikes.
You can actually dabble with heroin.
I don't think so. Dabbling. It's like a big time dabbler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but before then, she did a lot of pills. She kind of struggled with her weight a lot. Mm-hmm. So she did a lot of speed and of course she drank a lot. And I was told that she smoked pot, not on a regular basis, every once in a while, but, yeah, she did get into heroin later on.
Like how late? When she was on the streets or prior to that?
That's a good question, because when I interviewed the late actress Yvette Vickers for my first book, she told me she first met Barbara at a bar in Hollywood in the mid-50s, and she was introduced to Barbara by a mutual friend. And the guy had told Yvette that Barbara was at the bar waiting for her dealer who would sell her heroin. So that was in the mid-50s. And Yvette swore that happened. So I don't know. I mean, maybe she had started then.
Well, when did all this stuff happen with Francho and Tom? Was that prior to 55?
Yes, that was 1951. In September, Barbara had met Francho at one of the nightclubs in Hollywood in 1950. Mm-hmm. She was a contestant in a Charleston contest, which I think, you know, if you really visualize that, that sounds really neat. Like, I bet you that was a lot of fun.
Yes.
I think it was either at the Macombo or Ciro's. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the judges that night. And evidently he looked at her and he fell in love with her at first sight. So they met that night and they were, you know, together from then on. But then in 1951, when he was out of town and Barbara, they were engaged by then. When Francho was out of town, she met Tom Neal at a pool party in Hollywood.
Yeah, she said she saw his bod and she fell in love. That's so funny.
Actually, she said she saw his bathing suit.
Yes, his manhood, perhaps.
Yeah, she knew he was the only man for her. So I think that's a hoot. I mean, if she did say that,
that is so funny. I mean, really.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
So,
and if she did say that, it shows she has a great sense of humor.
Yeah, and she was hot for Mr. Tom.
Yeah.
So did she dump Francho when she started seeing Tom?
Not really. She went back and forth between both guys.
Do you think she loved Francho, or she loved the fact that he was sort of Hollywood royalty and so respected?
Yeah, the second one. You think that? Yeah. I don't think she loved him. I think she respected him. No, I'm 99% sure she never loved him. I'm sure of it. I mean, if you really look at the photos of them together, she doesn't look totally comfortable with him.
No.
In any of the photos. And I mean, he's gazing at her all starry-eyed.
Yeah, he's goo-goo-eyeing her big time.
Right, and she's got this look on her face like she's probably thinking of Tom Neal.
Yeah, and his bathing suit. I want to get into those trunks, baby.
That's right. Yeah. Well, he was pretty outrageous, too.
Francho? You
know, no, well, they all were, I guess, in their own way.
Yes.
But Tom Neal was said to be, you know, a macho guy and a lady killer. And
yeah. I don't get that, though. You know, I don't like muscle men and people who do that, because it's like, you know, that's such a vain thing to do constantly, that you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you're pumping iron and doing one-armed push-ups and things like that.
Yeah, I know.
But Barbara was impressed. Go figure.
Maybe he should have devoted more time to exercising his mind and his heart and soul. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not really too impressed by Tom Neal.
Yeah, he grosses me out for many reasons. Someone said he went to Harvard. Is that true?
You know, I don't know offhand. I can't believe I forgot that part, but I'm not really sure. He might have gone and left and gone to Hollywood. I don't think he graduated from Harvard.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, so, and he did a lot of the low-budget noir films with that. The worst woman in noir. What was her name in Detour? Anne Savage. Yeah. Oh,
she was wonderful. What an actress.
She was. You hated her. She was so disgusting. Unbelievable. She was horrid.
And he did a great job in that film, too. I mean,
he did.
You know, that had to be his best film. I'm sure it was considered to be his best film. But she was excellent.
She was. She was so vicious and evil.
In fact, a wonderful friend of mine named Kent Adamson was a good friend of Anne Savage's, and he's also her biographer. And he was kind enough to share some thoughts that she had about Tom with me, and they're in the book.
Yes, I read them, the new book. I liked that a lot, and it was very fascinating. And I just found that their relationship was kind of crazy. And with Francho, obviously he was obsessed with her because Jean Wallace was a bad girl. He married, you know, Barbara. He was totally in love with her. And I didn't know that he was married to Diana Dorn, his last wife. I didn't know that at all.
Dolores Dorn.
Dolores Dorn, yes.
Yeah, and you know, she's still living.
Is she really?
Yes, she's 85.
Wow.
I wasn't lucky enough to interview her for either project, but yeah, she's still alive.
Wow. I
would have loved to have spoken to her, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen.
Yeah. I posted on my Facebook page, this woman does an amazing blog about Francho because I like him. I like his acting. I think he lived a fascinating life. And she had an interview. The woman wrote like a small ebook about her relationship with Francho. And, you know, talked about his alcoholism and, you know, him being verbally abusive and things like that.
And, of course, he was married to Joan Crawford. Don't forget that.
Yeah, but the good thing about Joan was when he divorced Dorn, he was found to have terminal cancer and Joan took care of him. So
that's great.
I thought that was pretty darn good.
Yeah. I did too.
As you know, and then we just have to talk. So Barbara was a model. She was married. How old was she when she married her first husband?
Well, actually, she met her first husband in high school, and they eloped when she was, I think, 15 or 16. She married a fellow student. But that didn't last long, and her parents had the marriage annulled.
Oh, I didn't know that. So she...
Then there was also a rumor, it was told to me by a few people, actually, that Barbara had several short-lived marriages while she was in high school.
Wow.
And each one was annulled. But, you know, Jan Redfield said she didn't know about that, and her brother... When I asked him about it, you know, he didn't answer one way or the other.
Yeah.
So I really don't know if it's true, but that was told to me by two or three people.
Wow.
That she had a few marriages before she married John Payton, who was an Air Force captain.
And how old was she when she married John?
17.
Yikes.
She was like off and running.
Yeah, and she had the child at what age?
She gave birth to John Lee Payton, her only son, in 1947. She was 20.
And they divorced pretty quickly after, right? Because she was modeling, and then she decided to go to Hollywood.
Right. They separated in mid-1948, but they didn't actually divorce until 1950.
But she didn't have anything to do with him, right? It was just like they just didn't bother to get divorced.
Right. But they stayed friends. And in fact, several years later, they actually considered getting back together.
Like how many years later?
In the mid-50s.
After Francho 54. And Tom?
Yeah, because, well, John Payton, like I said, he was an Air Force. I think he was a colonel by then. And he fought in the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually held captive in Korea for a while. And when he was released and came back to the States, Barbara announced that they were going to remarry. And that was in 1954. But he put a stop to it. I guess he might have considered it for a minute or two.
Right.
But then when he realized that how bad her life had gotten, he put the kibosh on it. But from what I was told by John Lee, Barbara's son, Barbara and John Payton stayed close. They stayed close friends for several years afterward. So,
but he went and got custody of John.
Right. Because he didn't approve of Barbara's lifestyle. He loved her, but he didn't approve of her lifestyle. And he knew that taking their son away from Barbara would be the best thing for him.
And he never saw her again, did he?
No. When Barbara lost custody of her son in 1956, he was 9 years old. They had one final meeting after she lost custody of him. And they met, and it was a tearful meeting. They cried and hugged each other. And then that was it. They never laid eyes on each other again after that.
Did they speak? Nothing?
They spoke one time. Barbara called him and said, and she was drunk, and she said that she was getting presents for him for Christmas. And he didn't know what to make of it because he said she sounded so out of it.
Yeah.
And she was totally, you know, inebriated. And that was the last time they spoke.
How sad, huh?
Very sad. Very, very sad. He said it did a real number on him, and he never got over it.
Well, I can't imagine, because, you know, we talked about this the first show, is that she certainly loved her son, but she was a rotten mother. Let's face it. She really was.
Yes.
And, you know, she'd leave him alone for days on end or have these wild parties while he was in the house. And it wasn't good for him, but he always maintained that he loved his mom and that she was a good person and fun and kind.
Kind. He said she never mistreated him, never spoke harshly to him. He said he enjoyed every minute in her presence, and she would cook delicious meals for him when they were together. She was very generous, bought him lots of toys and clothes and took him places. But, you know, she was her own worst enemy.
She was horrible, yeah.
She eventually would always get in her own way. And it's really, it's a tragedy. It's very sad.
Incredibly sad that she just sort of, if anyone, I can't understand anyone not having empathy for her, but there are people who don't understand alcoholism or mental illness or things like that. Who would choose to live the life that Barbara led?
That's exactly right. Who in their right mind would choose to live that life?
And 10 years, she was out of Hollywood for like 10 years, right? And that was that slow, drawn out suicide. She must have hated herself. She just had to have hated herself.
And she kept hoping for a comeback.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know. Come on. I mean, she was so deep in the throes of her alcoholism, and by then she was prostituting herself.
No, for just like nothing, for like a bottle of cheap booze.
Right. Yeah.
And she had like no teeth. She got beat up. She had no teeth. She was living like a ragamuffin. She was raped by a group of guys, right?
A teenage gang.
Yes. Yep.
They drove her to a vacant lot in Hollywood, and they beat her and raped her.
How sad. And people tried to help Barbara, but Barbara just stayed. She didn't really want to be helped. I guess she figured she deserved it, but I don't really understand the whole thing.
That's what I believe, too. I believe she unconsciously felt she deserved it.
Yeah, because who else could live that kind of life? What did she do? Yes, she was a party girl. Yes, she had sex with tons of people. Yes, she was pretty notorious. But, you know, I can't imagine anyone choosing the way she lived, and certainly towards the end of her life. God, no.
Do you know some writers today, they have a field day with her, and they just love to rake her over the coals? You would think in these enlightened times, people would be a lot more compassionate and empathetic. But there are one or two writers out there who still make her the butt of their very sick jokes. And I think that's pitiful.
It's pitiful, and it's because they have no empathy or understanding of what people can go through. I mean, I've dealt with people who are addicted. My brother was addicted to drugs, and he had some kind of life. But he wasn't a bad person. He was sick. Right. He was very sick. Yes.
That's right.
He did terrible things. But I know, you know, that he wasn't well.
You know, Grace, by acknowledging that it's a sickness, we're not justifying the behavior.
Not at all. Her behavior was horrific.
Yeah, it was horrific. We're not giving them a pass. But you have to go a step past that and say there was something behind it. There was an illness.
Something.
There was a deep psychological illness. And, you know, it answers a lot of questions about the person when you realize that. It makes more sense.
But these people don't get it. Why don't they get it? You know, there were a lot of people who talked about my brother. And I'd be like, geez, get over it. Don't you get it? I remember, you know, he was lots older than me, but he started doing drugs when he was 14, and then he became like a paranoid schizophrenic. And it was just awful. And you just, I don't understand how people don't know it. Perhaps they just judge everybody, and it's ridiculous, but I don't know how that happens.
Well, this one writer that I know of, recently wrote a book about one of her films, and he just trashed her in print. He called her mattress back, and he said for her every day was 6 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock. He said 6 o'clock.
But why?
Why?
Why did she do it? She enjoy it? Was it something she just felt she should be doing? Was it just something to get away from herself?
The woman is long. She's been gone for 50 years. Why dance on her grave like that? Her son is still alive. You know, and he reads these things. I know that for a fact. And each time he reads something like that about his mother, it opens the wound. It reopens the wound. I know that.
Yes.
That angers me. It really angers me a lot. Because she doesn't deserve it, and John Lee Payton doesn't deserve
it. He certainly doesn't. And I have to say, you know, you got to give him credit for being understanding about his mother and still feeling love and compassion for his mother, because he could loathe her with a lot of the stuff she did.
That's right. You're right. But he has stayed loyal to her memory. And he said if she had treated him differently, you know, he would have told me that. But he said he can't in all good conscience say she ever mistreated him. She did not mistreat him.
I think mistreating was when she left him alone for 3 days.
Yeah.
That's mistreatment. And
yes. You're right, but you know what? He said that was fun. From his perspective,
but he was just a kid. He was like 7. It was horrible.
I know, but let's face it, that was a terrible thing to do.
Yeah,
you know.
She was no wonderful mom. And that's something we can both agree on. I'm looking
here. The only thing I could think of was her drinking was really clouding her judgment by then. You know?
Yes.
I'm just trying to make sense of it, because really it doesn't make sense. Why any mother or father, why any parent would leave their child alone for days. That's sick.
It is sick. And yet she probably was so high and drunk that she didn't give it a second thought.
Right.
She thought perhaps that was normal. I'm looking here at the book, which has some wonderful pictures. And it has here that Francho in 41 married Gene Wallace. And he had two children with her, right?
Two sons. I think only one is still alive.
Yes. And In this book, you say that Barbara's son said that Franco was not very nice to him, and his sons were like little creeps, right?
No, not at all. He said he didn't remember. John said he didn't remember Franco all that well, but he said he remembers Franco's sons. He said they were a little bit older than him, and they had some good times together.
Oh,
yeah. He did. He has good memories of Franco.
Oh, that's good. I don't know what I was reading.
That's all right. That's okay. Yeah, he has good memories of his sons. They used to play together.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have too many memories of Franco. He does remember Tom Neal.
Oh, what did he think of Tom?
Well, he said he thought he was a neat guy. And he said he spent the... They're coming to get me. John said that Tom Neal was a neat person, and he spent a lot of time with John, and never mistreated him, never spoke harshly to him. So he had good memories of him.
What about Tom Neal? He had a son. Was that prior to Barbara or after Barbara?
That was after Barbara. Tom moved to Palm Springs in the late 1950s, and he married a former airline stewardess, and Tom Neal Jr. was their son. I think he was born in 1956.
But this was not, he was not the son of the woman that Tom killed, correct?
That's correct. Right. She was hit. The woman that Tom killed was Gail Cloak Everett, and he met her at a hotel in Palm Springs. She was the front office. She was the receptionist at a hotel, and they met and got married. But they evidently fought a lot, and she was a party girl too. And he wound up shooting her to death.
Which is amazing, because the prosecution wanted him to get the death penalty, and he ended up getting involuntary manslaughter.
That's right. And he spent 7 years in prison. And man, I don't know if you looked at that photo.
Oh my God, yikes.
He's only 58.
Unbelievable. He looks like he's 75 easily.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I think a friend of mine is writing the biography of Tom Neal, and I think his life would make a fantastic film.
I agree. I think his life is something else. And somebody is writing a book about him. And I know someone asked you on the page about a Franco biography, and I would love it, because I think he was a really fascinating guy. You know?
Yeah.
He had a lot of demons. Franco.
He really did. I mean, wouldn't you consider him an A-list star?
Big time. He was A-list. Yeah. Everybody loved him. I loved his work. I thought he was amazing. Yeah. He wasn't like the Cary Grant or Clark Gable, but I thought he was suave, and he always, whether comedy or drama, I just liked a movie when he was in there. So
he came across on film with a lot of class.
Big time. Yeah. And he did.
And I mean, he had a really wealthy family. He came from a wealthy family. So he was born, into a really wonderful life. But like you said, he had his demons. He was an alcoholic.
And he could be very
sadistic.
Yes. I read other things, not in your book, but we both kind of said we know, we're not going to talk about it, but boy, oh boy, I totally believe it. Barbara also had a big time affair, or just maybe a little one, with Steve Cochran, who I find, and you have pictures of him in there. He was another guy who was pretty fascinating, and he was
He
was wild, wild, wild. So,
right.
They must have
made some pair. I bet you they were some pair when they were together.
But I don't think they were together too long, right? Probably not during the making of the film.
That's right. Yeah, they made a film called Dallas together. Actually, Gary Cooper was the star, and Ruth Roman was his leading lady, and Barbara had a secondary part in the film.
And didn't Ruth Roman hate Barbara or something?
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
She absolutely hated Barbara. And I'm not really sure why. That's kind of mysterious. But well, I was told that actually a lot of people on the set favored Barbara over Ruth Roman. So maybe there was some jealousy there.
Yeah, that she just, you know, Ruth Roman never did anything for me. She always seemed harsh, no matter what she was in.
And I'm not a big fan of hers.
Yeah, she's not somebody who I would go out of my way to watch.
No, but I mean, she worked a lot. She had a good career.
She had a great career. She did.
Yeah.
She worked up until her death in the 70s.
That's right.
She did this movie, The Baby. Did you ever see Baby, The Baby?
No, but I've
got it. It's amazing.
It's a horror film.
Oh, my God.
I want to see that one.
You have to. And she's groovy in it. You know, she's like this groovy mother who wears like a fringe shawl, and she's doing like groovy dancing and like wearing bell bottoms. It's a hoot. It's something that's really good.
Well, did you ever see Look in Any Window?
Look in Any Window.
Yeah. In that film, she played Paul Anka's promiscuous mother. And he plays a peeping Tom in Suburbia.
Oh, yes, yes, I've seen that. Oh, my God, what a movie.
That's a pretty good film. I actually like that film. That's entertaining.